How's everybody this morning? All right, let's start it right here, I guess. I'm gonna do my little drawing of a guy here. And he's going to be smiling. He's happy. He's in church. And he's thinking. And then we're going to do this. And we're going to do that. And we're going to do this. All right. That's the best I can draw that. Welcome to Wilson Art School. Today we're talking about, as we started last week, our series on triumph over triggers. And if you guys want to know the text that we're using to build all of this, it's out of John. Let's just go over there real quick and we'll read it so we can get caught up here. It's John 9, verse 1. John 9, verse 1. And it starts out, he passed by, he saw a blind man from birth, and his disciples asked him, Rabbi, or if it's in the South, we said, Ribbi. No, Rabbi. years ago, I worked for a music store, and there's a radio station down in Greenville, and it was called WLFJ, With Love from Jesus. And I was in there cutting a commercial for something that we were doing at the music store, and in the booth beside me was this minister preaching. And he's in there preaching, recording the thing that's going to go out on the airwaves the next day. And I'm in here recording a commercial for a thing. And it's so funny. And the Pharisees came up to Jesus and said, Ribbi. So the man just called him a steak. So anytime I see the word rabbi in scripture, I get triggered. There you go. All right, he says, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. In verse 6, it says, having said these things, he spat on the ground and made mud with saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. The neighbors, goes on and said, and the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? And then others started doubting. Of course, verse 9, some said it was others said, no, it's not. It looks like him, but it's not him. He kept saying, he said, I am that man. Verse 10, so they said to him, then how are your eyes open? So, we have this account in the Gospel of John of this miraculous thing happening. And what we're discovering here is there's three areas that Jesus brought healing to that man through this. And the reason we're calling this series Triumph Over Our Triggers is because we broke into, you know, the context, the historical theological context of a person spitting. Because how many has ever read that and just said, that is awkward. Why would you heal a man that way? And then how many was here for the sermon and heard the reason? I won't go through it but you know, there was a real reason. He was in counseling, it's called exposure therapy. He literally was exposing the man to that which he was being probably being triggered by. And also, there's all kinds of historical and theological context to that as well, and we got into that. But in that one act, Jesus touched him three different ways. And to me, it represents, you know, the ways of God. It represents how God brings healing to all of us. And if we just look at the physical healing, that is, he was biologically touched. And that's all we pull from that story. We've missed two-thirds of it. Because what we've said and what I believe is, wouldn't it be cruel to give a man sight but not fix the things he's afraid of? The fear. So now all of a sudden you've added one more sense to him. So what's he going to do? He's going to see that much more to be afraid of. That much more to fear. That much more to be depressed and oppressed about. And so from start to finish in that passage, you see a sort of unfurling, if you will, of the ways of God and how he is going to not just heal this man, but make this man whole, okay? And how many know that that's the way a doctor can heal you, but God can make you whole. A doctor can use the things of science, and God love them, and we need them, and not speaking against them, but he can't. I went to a doctor in 2020 because my psoriasis was just getting out of control, okay? This was in 2019, excuse me, in 2019. And it did its job. It took away the plaque psoriasis on my knees and mostly my elbows. The way it works is it suppresses your immune system because psoriasis is an autoimmune disorder. And then there was something that happened in 2020. I can't remember what it was, but it seems like it was in a big event. I think a frog caught a cold or something. But nevertheless, people were getting sick rapidly. We were all, you know, and that was going on. And I got to looking, and I was like, I went to my doctor, who not my skin doctor, not my dermatologist, but my family doctor, who's a minister, a pastor as well at his church. He's a Presbyterian. And me and him have one of these relationships that we like to dig at each other. I'm just going to say it. I mean, we just go on and on. He's sarcastic like I am. And I says, here's the problem. His name is Ed Bird, Dr. Bird. I said, Ed, I'm on this medication, a Tesla, and it suppresses my immune system, and then we got this going on. What should I do? He goes, well, Terry, it wouldn't hurt, you know, to eat some lettuce every once in a while and get on a treadmill. Now, that was his, because that's the relationship we have, and at the time, I'm 300-some-odd pounds, right? So my point is this. He was addressing what? My theology about my body. My belief system about and what I believe God would do for my, you know, he was addressing my mindset on the way I thought about things. And so that put me on this health course to eventually I'm off of Otesla and I don't have psoriasis. But he offered something more than just medicine. He offered what? A way to get whole. Right? And that's what Jesus did to this man. He didn't just fix his eyes. He fixed his way he thought about things. And then that eventually led to the way he feels about things. So what we're going to look, I put this here because it's really cool. He starts off with his belief system. He starts off with his belief system in this passage, and we're going to break it open. And that led to what? The way he behaves. Right? The way he behaves. If I believe right, I'll do what? I'll behave right. And then because I believe right, I behave right, what happens? I'm going to just say experience my feelings or, let's see here, I'm just going to put feel. I'm not going to alliterate this thing. But the way I feel is going to be right. Here's the problem with this whole thing. It all feeds into one another. Have you noticed that? Sometimes I start my feelings and I feel like, well, you know, I'm this, I'm that. I was raised this way, and because of that, it reinforces what? I believe. I feel this, so I start believing things that back up my feelings, and those beliefs always inform my behavior. And then what happens is the fruit of that behavior, the consequence of that behavior, goes right back into the way I feel. And it's this vicious, vicious cycle. It's this vicious cycle. And so at some point, somewhere, we have to break that cycle, don't we? At some point, somewhere, it has to be broken. Now, Jesus starts off with the belief system, and I think that's where you should always start. But I have seen, because it's connected together, I was in a meeting one time, and a good friend of mine, attorney, very smart guy, ADA from New York, we were sharing, you know, we were business owners, and we're in this sort of mastermind, and he's just got the blues. He is just blue, 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 blue. You know, everything's wrong. Nothing's going right. The world's falling apart, blah, 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 blah. He is just upset, right? And for whatever reason, it didn't occur to me to try to refute his logic. It didn't. I just said, I'm not going to win an argument with an attorney. You know, this guy is a paid debater, you know. So I can't use reason, rationale, and debate to get him out of this. And so I says, could you do me a favor? He said, yeah. I said, I know this is going to sound weird. I know this is going to sound weird. But I want to play this song. And while I play this song, I just want you to sway back and forth. Stand up.
You said this?
I said this. He says, I thought, I said, I know. I said, I'm doing, and I made it out like, I'm just doing this study. on physiology and how it works into psychology. If you would, just if you don't mind, just humor me. I know this hasn't got nothing to do. I know it ain't going to change anything. But if you'll just do this. So he started moving, and I was like, he goes, Terry, come on. I said, just humor me. And then we started doing this. I said, come on. And I want you to know, he didn't even know it, Doug. By the end of that, everything ain't as bad as it is. It could be. There are some things that we could do. Why? Because the way he behaved changed the way he felt, and the way he felt informs his belief. Now he's opened up to some possibilities. So at some point, we have to know where we're at in a moment and break a chain. And that's why the Word of God is such a powerful tool. Let's get into this real quick. So we're down here, and what we're talking about today is the theology of things. Now, I left off something last week because we got into what are triggers. And we said a trigger is an outside stimulant that causes an internal, emotional, psychological, and sometimes physiological response. So, you know, sometimes we can be triggered by something, and not only we might not even be cognitively thinking about what's going on, but we feel something, and our heart rate is pulsing, or our hands get sweaty, or something physiological happens. And so we talked about, you know, what a trigger is and different ways that it manifests in our body, in our reality. We talked about how it works. Remember we talked last week that, you know, adjust this here, that, you know, neuroscientists and neurologists tell us that we got like, what is it, 2 million? 2 million bits of information hitting us all at one time, and we're only designed to cognitively think about 5 at one time, you know? And so where does all that information go? Well, we're still absorbing it. We're just not thinking about it. And then all of a sudden, I see something in my periphery. It speaks to my subconscious. It triggers because my subconscious has a memory of something that happened 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whenever. All of a sudden, I'm getting this emotional response, and I don't even know why. Has that ever happened to anyone? You just walk into a room, and all of a sudden, you feel a certain way, and you cannot articulate why you feel that way. Well, what's going on, it could be, not all the time, but what could be is our senses have picked up on something. We have been triggered by a past emotion, feeling, or something else. And more than likely, if we're getting anxious, then what's happened is that's a negative emotion that has to be dealt with. And because it hasn't been dealt with, it hasn't been healed, then all of a sudden it's creating, you know, I've got this belief system deep down inside of me I don't even know about. And all of a sudden, it's caused me to behave, and I avoid this. I don't want to be around this. I avoid these people. I avoid this type. I avoid this situation. I avoid whatever, and because I don't want to feel this way, right? And so that's what happens. And so that's how a trigger works. And then the effect of it is the effect of a negative trigger when we're triggered negatively is stress. Now, if you remember a training and teaching we did. When did we do the most powerful prayer in the Bible where it was, search me, O God? Remember that teaching that we did here? Search me, O God, and reveal unto me if there's any iniquity. Remember, there's a teaching, and you can go to fathersvineyard.org and go under ministries, type on conversations, go back in the history. And by the way, Miss Phyllis, that's where these I've been asked several times. Randy posts these around Wednesday. It's typically when these get posted. Because I've had a couple people ask, they wanted last week. You just go to fathersvineyard.org, go under ministry, go to coffee sessions, and you will see everybody, Mr. Ed and anybody that's taught in here, all of those teachings are right there. And so this series on being triggered will be there. But if you go back, we did a thing on how God, the first thing we have to understand when we ask God to search us. And reveal to us is we got to know how God made us. He said he fearfully and wonderfully made us, right? And so what makes us who we are? What is our personality? Remember we got in that teaching, the 8 dichotomies of a personality? Remember that? Everybody's looking at me like it is 8:49 and you haven't been caffeinated yet. All right. Well, you can write these. I'll give them to you real quick if you want, but... there's 8 dichotomies, and let's just get down here. 1, 2, 3, 4. And your number one is what gives you energy. okay? And that's a binary decision. The other one is, how do you perceive things? Your sensory. How do you perceive the world? Because it's different than other people. More than likely, it's different than your spouse. Because God has a sense of humor. And he wants to keep it interesting. And the logic you use, or let me back that up. I shouldn't say that. The way you judge things, the way you judge, and I'm not talking about the theological term of judging people, but the way you judge a situation, and the way you plan out things in the future. So those are what sort of makes you up. In the eight dichotomies, you got a choice there, and everybody's familiar with the first one. You're either what? Introverted or extroverted. Either being around people gives you energy or it takes energy away, right? Okay? And then you have a sensory perceiver that is, excuse me, I'm using wrong words here. How do you perceive the world? Your perception on life, the reality you're looking at. You're either going to use a sensory way of seeing it or an intuitive way of seeing it. Now, what does that mean? People aren't familiar with that. So,
Yeah.
In other words, I see the holistic of it. I can't pinpoint exactly. It's the old adage, you can't see the forest because of the trees, or you can't see the tree because of the forest. You see big picture, small pictures. And an intuitive perceiver, they just, I hear the entire song. I hear the entire music. I didn't hear that it's in the key of C. You know, because that's, then you start getting into more of a detailed viewpoint, and you're not intuiting. The judging function here is going to be either logic or value. Now, that's where the relationships sort of deteriorate a lot of times. 9 times out of 10, you're married to one or the other. You're one and they're the other. And so that's where, because here's the thing. Y'all might be the same, both of your extroverts or both of your introverts. You might perceive the world the same. One's a detailed, sees everything precisely, or one's more, I just perceive things intuitively. But then 9 out of 10 times when you have relationship problems, it's right here, because the way we come to our conclusions is completely different. We use a whole different cognitive function than our partner does. And boy, does that make for some interesting conversations around the dinner table. You know? And then the last is plan. When I see the future and I'm trying to project what we're going to do in the future, am I open, you know, or am I a closed planner? What does that mean? If you plan a vacation with your spouse, you can always tell who's who, because I might say, we're going to go there and we're going to, from 12 to 2, we'll give ourselves time to be able to walk around town, do what we want to do. And then from 4 to 8, we'll do this. And that's about as close to being a closed. I'm open. I'm like, let's not make any plans. Let's just play it by ear when we get there. My wife is, we will get up at 6:45 a.m. precisely. We'll be in the shower at 6:55 a.m. We will then have our clothes already laid out, because I've already detailed, and that's my wife too. I mean, I joke with people, if I knew the Dewey Decimal System, I could find my socks, but I don't. And so for those that were in school years ago, they know that. But, you know, she is a very, very planner. I mean, she organizes, and I'm just like, where's your socks? It's in that side of the house. You know, that's about as detailed as I get, you know. So the judging function, so why do I bring all this up? When you're under stress, this is a weird thing, and we talked about this last training, so I don't want to repeat it too much, but it does get into triggering, and then we're going to get into beliefs. When you're under stress, each one of those gets inverted, reversed. Yes, I see that hand. Yes, ma'am. Three is my attempt to say judge. Yeah. Our judging function. These are the eight dichotomies of our persona, our personality, the way God made us. And what happens is, if I get triggered, I'm under stress. And if I'm under stress, what happens is these get inverted, which means it's like this. I'm right-handed, as you can tell. All of a sudden, because of my stress does this. It ties my right hand behind my back, and the only way I can write is with my left hand. Now, I can still write something up here. I can still communicate to you. But now under stress, I'm not as clear. I'm not as precise. I'm not as fast. You don't understand me. And I'm getting more frustrated because I'm not being understood. That is the effect of stress on us. When we are triggered, sometimes we can be put under stress. So if my energy level, for instance, is I am an extrovert, well, if I'm under stress, what happens? I just want to be by myself. Just leave me alone. I got to get back here. Don't talk to me. Don't look at me. Don't even have my name in your mouth. Right? I'm under stress. But if I'm an introverted person, hey, let's go out. Let's be around people. I got to be around people. I can't be my. All of a sudden, I'm codependent on a crowd. I've got to be around people because why? I'm under stress. I'm trying to figure out a way to cope. If I'm under stress. And this is big in business. I work with a lot of business guys on this. And my ability to perceive is most business guys really, believe it or not, are intuitive perceivers. They just are. They see the holistic and they have to hire for their weakness on that. What happens is they're under stress and they become a sensory perceiver. So what does that mean? They start micromanaging every little detail that's in front of them. And the problem is, that's their left hand cognitively, so they don't do it well. That's not their natural strength. That doesn't mean, now guess what? And this happens. I've been under stress for a long, has anyone had a long period of time you've been under stress? When there's been times in my life in business, I've been under stress. A business owner, you know, just like anybody else. What happens? I'm having to write with my left hand a lot. What does that mean? I start getting rehearsed. I start practicing. So you can develop some strengths in your weakness because you had to. Because if you're in business, it's a do or die season and you got to perform. Well, this isn't my strength. I'm not a detailed person, but I'm going to learn to get detailed because it's sink or swim, do or die, baby. You know what I'm saying? But it's not my natural. So that's the thing we have to understand about ourselves and give ourselves grace and mercy and understand it because I've been triggered, I'm under stress. If I have a judging a function of a value base, now what's the difference between values and logic?
One of them's right, one of them's wrong.
That's right. Sometimes in the church we can spiritualize it and say, well, they have a gift of mercy and they have a prophetic gift. That's how we articulate it in the church world sometimes. But it basically means this. I always use the metaphor of a umpire because when you're judging, you're just calling balls and strikes. So if you are a logic-based umpire, you're squatting down and you've got it squared up, and if the ball comes through that square, it's a strike. Black and white. That's the strike zone. That's the prophetic gift, right? Here's the structure, here's the doctrine, here's the theology. It's either in or out. Okay? A value-based umpire starts taking things into account. That is, a famous great pitcher. I'm thinking of the guy from Atlanta that, Mad Dog, what did they call him?
Greg Maddux,
thank you. That's who I was thinking of. That's Greg Maddux on the mound. And he's in his prime of his season. And this is a big game. And that catcher sat up right here. And yes, it's a 3 or 4 inches off the plate. But that catcher did not move his glove at all. He hit the target. Terry sent me a video the other day on social media. Literally, the catcher sat up in the other batter's box. It was feet, 2 or 3 feet off the plate. Hit the glove, and the umpire called strike. I was like, what strike zone is he looking at? Catcher didn't move up. The point is this. Because of all of those factors, and it's only a couple inches, and it's a big game, and this guy's been swinging at everything, and because he hit that, he gives him the strike. Because he judged that on a value. He had all these variables come into play that says, well, there's some nuance here that we need to consider. That's a values-based judge. where the other umpire, I don't care who's on the mound. I didn't even take that into account. I didn't take into account whether the, I don't care if the catcher sat up over here in the batter's box and had to reach to catch the ball. If the ball went through the strike zone, it's a strike. You see the difference? So in marriage and in relationships, more times than not, because God has a sense of humor, he pairs you with someone that's typically on the other spectrum. And so knowing this, guys, I'll talk to men because I dare not say something to the ladies because I'm married to one and she's probably listening, so I'm not even going to go there. But guys, understanding who your wife is and who you are will go a long way in how to communicate. You know, I am very logic-based. My wife's very value-based. We've had times where she has committed things to her family or her mother or something like that. Things have come up that made that commitment impossible to make. So I can't go in there and just start saying fact one, fact two, fact three, fact four. You can't do this because of all these facts. Because then all of a sudden we're at this tug of war and, you know, we're not getting along, right? So what do I have to do? I know pleasing your mother and making sure she is happy and comfortable is the highest priority you have. And I want to support you in making sure your mother's taken care of. I want you to consider this. Because of these things, is there a way we can still honor that commitment, but do it in a different way because of these situations? Just using that language has saved me so much time. That's free of charge, guys. I'm just giving you out. This is not a marriage seminar or anything else. But just understanding our differences, because the way she's going to judge a situation is, did I take care of my family? Did my family see and know that I loved them? And while that's important to me, my thing, do we have the money in the bank to do it? You know, so I'm the accountant over there, just adding and subtracting, you know. So we can do it, but why don't we defer here? Why don't we do a little bit here? You know, so we have to come, let us reason together. The point is this, when we are triggered, when we are stressed, and when we are stressed, we are then using, and so here's the thing, Terry Wilson gets under stress, here's the thing. If you ever come up to me and ask and compel a decision out of me, and you hear it come out of my mouth, anything that would lead you to think I'm speaking from my feelings, you know I'm under stress. Because, you know, well, this is the way I feel. This is, if I'm in my normal, everything's good, well, the Word of God says this, or best business practices says this, or da-da-da. I mean, I am logic. That's my natural state, not under stress. If I'm under stress, I don't know. I'm in my feelings. And so I'm making more value-based decisions, which sometimes is good. Sometimes, because I don't use that function well, I'm going to make a bad decision. And that's why God puts us together with people that are different, so that we can do that. Lessons addressing theology. That's where we're at, and we're going to hit this in the next 15 minutes. So here's the first thing he addressed in that, so that we understand this situation that we all have, and so that we can get on this wheel and start breaking the behavior. The first thing that he did was he addressed his beliefs, his theology, because here it goes. He says this, as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed. Now, why is that so important? They had that conversation out loud. It was important enough for the Holy Spirit to compel the writer to record it. So why is it important? Well, what was the prevailing thought process of the day? If a person had illness, sickness, if they had a problem, if they had a situation, what was the attitude toward with the culture?
You must have done something wrong.
You did something, or your daddy did something. Somebody did something wrong.
Yeah.
And it's still kind of, why? Well, there is actual biblical text for it. Look that up sometimes. I'll just go over it real quick because, I mean, these guys weren't just shooting from the hip. There's a reason here. It says here, let's just go just a few of them. Numbers, the Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love and forgiving in sin and rebellion. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children for the sin of the parents in the third and fourth generation. Says it. Okay? Then it goes on and says, you shall not bow to them that worship them, for I, the Lord God, am jealous. God punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. That's in Exodus, Deuteronomy. You should. So there is text after text after text. But then something weird happens. Then it also says in these same Old Testament books, okay, if you're a dispensationalist in here, the same dispensation, okay? The one who sins is the one who will die. This is in Ezekiel 18:20. The child will not share the guilt of the parent, nor will the parent share the guilt of the child. The righteous of the righteous will be credited to them. So what is going on? It sounds like we got two different things being said. So what is, here's the point. When God is talking to Terry Wilson, he's saying, when he's talking to me in the context of a dad, Terry, be careful what you do. Everything you do is going to affect your kids, your grandkids, and your great-grandkids. Be careful what you do. A good friend of mine, native Rutherford County people in here, people natively from this area know this name, Rusty Collins. Anybody know that name? Rusty's a good friend of mine, served on a police force, the sheriff department for, I think he joined in 1970, 1969. Good for him and Shakita, his wife, great friends of mine. He told me one time, he says, Terry, when I started on the police force years ago, I was arresting these people here. And then come around the 80s and 90s, I started arresting their kids. And now I'm arresting their grandkids. What he was saying is this, what we're raised in informs our attitude. It influences how we think, how we feel about things. And because of that, if we don't break out of it, we're going to be a product of what we were parented in. So when he's talking to Terry Wilson, he's saying, Terry, be careful because you're setting up all these roadblocks and these entrapments for your kids. But when he's talking to Terry Wilson as a son, because my name is John Terrell Wilson III, okay? I'm the third generation of a tragedy. I mean, if I make it and don't hit my wife, attempt to kill her, go to jail for domestic violence and attempted murder, then I will be the first one in four generations. I know I will. There's no doubt in my mind because I'm a different person. I'm nowhere. When people that have known my great-grandfather, grandfather, and dad, and they see me, they said, wouldn't even know you're in the same family. But why? You can break generational curses. You are not subject to what your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents. You have the power to choose this day. What am I going to do? I don't have to be a problem. So when the theological question comes up, why is his lot in life the way it is? Is it because of him? Or because, see, religion wants to look to someone to blame. A relationship wants to look to someone to redeem. And he was there to redeem. He wasn't there to blame. He wasn't getting into the blame game. Now, there's all kinds of layers here theologically that goes into it. One was talking about just, you know, this is where we push up against the free will of man and the sovereignty of God. You know, we got that thing going on there. We're not going to open that can of worms this morning, but we got that there. But it's a healthy, hey, sometimes God lets things be just so I can show up and show out. You know, so we can't get in our head here saying, you know, everything is just contingent upon the actions and behavior. He's not beholden to that. So relationship speaks to parents to honor. So who's to blame? The parents. The lesson there is, and if you read on down in the story, even though historians and people of that time outside of biblical narrative, but the extra biblical narrative of the historians at that time believe this man was actually divorced from his parents because his parents was probably of lower means. They couldn't afford to keep him up. And because of that, there was no welfare system, so to speak, like we have in today's world. And because he's a mouth to feed, and because, you know, he can't work on the farm, he can't work in whatever their business was, he can't carry his own weight. So they go before the courts and say, give us respite here, give us a break, we can't handle him. So they divorced him, put him out there in a sanctioned area that people like him could go and beg. Okay, so that goes into a lot of this narrative of why, you know, he was triggered by that situation. But because of that, when Jesus saw him, I think that's rude, don't you? That's just, I'm being triggered. But because of that, I lost my place here. Where was I at? What was I saying? Was I making any sense? But because he was in that situation, one would think that, well, maybe there's this tension with his parents. But if you go down and read into the story, his parents are actually speaking on his behalf and said, no, this is really him. And there's a relationship there. So how many know you can have a relationship with people that you feel rejected by? You know, just because we're family, right? So there's still a relationship. They're still in proximity with this man because he's in the narrative. But it's still evident that they probably have rejected him because of financial concerns and things. So who's to blame? And then we look into the person. Is it him to blame? And so we look at that. And then it goes on down to Jesus saying this. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. So what he's saying there is, I like that he said, we must work the works. We must work the works. He didn't say, I am here to do the will of my Father. I am here to do these works. He says, we, the inclusive we. What does that tell you and I? We have a role to play in our triggers and our issues being healed. Because the narrative goes on down. What does it say? He spat on the ground. We talked about this. I picked on, and I see William's not here today, so I must have picked on him too hard. I'll have to apologize. But he spat on the ground, put mud in his eyes, and then what he did, he gave him a command. He said, go wash this off. And I said last week, and I still believe it this week, and I think the greatest miracle in that whole story is not necessarily that, because Jesus can do what Jesus does. Jesus is a healer. You know what I'm saying? Jesus healed that man. I mean, of course, Jesus healed him. He's Jesus. It's a miracle, but he's Jesus. You know what's a miracle to me? That man, after all that rejection and all of that situation, actually listened to what he said and did it. Because how many know when you're in your feelings, when you feel triggered, when you feel wounded, when you feel hurt, when you feel like you're betrayed, it is hard to take advice and act on it. Am I just the only one? That man's, read the narrative. Just by spatting on the ground and just by putting mud in his eyes did not heal him. He was still blind. When did the healing come? When he got up and moved on the very word he was given. So when I'm sitting here, Lord, I need you to heal me of this and I need you to heal me of that, his word is going to give instructions, isn't it? But if I just stop short and say, well, I tried religion, I tried this, it didn't work. I can hear the word, but what have I got to do? I got to do the work, right? Yes, ma'am.
You might even know, there's an old saying, and I have no clue what it probably came from it. Here's mud in your eye. Where does that come from?
I have no idea.
I don't even know, but
it could be from that, I don't know. But see, that's the miracle, is the man was hungry enough. Because that goes back to the Beatitudes, right? What's one of the ways that you're going to find happiness? Have a hunger. Blessed. Happy are those who hunger and thirst after my righteousness, what I do, the way I do things, my right standing. You are blessed when you have a hunger and a thirst. You're going to be happy. Why? Because it goes on and says, because you're going to be filled. Because when Terry Wilson gets hungry, what gets visited? The table, the kitchen, the stove, whatever it might be, right? But our job is to do what? Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry for healing. Stay hungry for right standing. Stay hungry for, I know that I've got this situation, I get triggered by it, but God said in His Word that by my stripes, you can be healed. It is available to me. The question I have is, am I hearing what He says, or am I rejecting it, or am I hearing it, but I don't like the way in which He's saying it? Because the other thing, the theological hurdle, and we got to get through here, is the way in which He helped this man. That's the other thing. That's the reason why it's a miracle for this guy to do this. Think about this. Someone spit and put mud in your eye and then tell you to do something, you might be tempted. It's like, this man is crazy. I ain't doing a thing he says. Well, you just lost out. We question God's means, His methods. And one of the things He did, He's God in the flesh. He could have touched him and been done, yet He used materials. He used means. God uses people today. How many has had a minister, a person, a friend, a family, a foe give you the word of God, but because of the context in which that content came, it was very difficult for you or for me to say, yes, Lord, I hear you. God always puts his healing for me, and I see it in the text here, God always puts His divine healing, His divine word, wrapped in a package that outside of it being God, I ordinarily just would not open up. I don't like that guy. God will put the very thing I need in that guy. Why? Because he's got a sick sense of humor. But that's the ways of God. And that man could have easily just said, well, if God wanted me healed, He would have just healed me. But instead, there's this rabbi that comes by claiming to be the Son of God, spit in people's eyes, you know, and start questioning the very methods and means in which healing was going to be provided if he wanted it. So the first thing he did in getting his triggers healed was he addressed his belief system, his theological issues. And so many times that's, for me, that's been the starting point that it's just like, but if I can get my belief systems right, I can start behaving right in a different way, and my behavior is going to inform how, the way I feel today, honestly, the way I feel today, physically, emotionally, spiritually, is based on what I did yesterday and the day before that. I am the walking fruit of decisions and behaviors made yesterday. And those decisions and behaviors I made yesterday is the direct result of my belief system. And I'll leave you with this. You know, this works in every area of our life, physical, spiritual, mental, it doesn't matter. I used to tell myself, boy, you're just overweight. Your days of running and exercise was back when you was in high school playing basketball. My mental state of what exercise was Coach Hines yelling baseline, and he would make us run suicides. And the last three people that got done with those suicides got to run again. Well, guess what I was? I was the least athletic on a state championship team. Okay? I could shoot. I could pass. But I could not run. I could not do a lot of physical things. I just wasn't that talented, right? And so exercise has always been a trigger for me. Someone bring it up, right? Someone had to go in, and because I thought that, I never did. And what did I behave like? A couch potato. And what did I feel like? A couch potato. And what did those feelings make me believe? Well, that's just my lot in life. Someone had to get involved, shake me, say, eat a vegetable. You know, go for a walk. You know. And well, they did more than that. They taught me that exercise didn't have to be you killing yourself. And they taught me about heart rates and the blue zone. And I got a little education on. And it changed my belief system. Because my belief system changed, it allowed me to go out and walk a day and not come home dying, not come home wishing I was dead, questioning whether what I just did was of any effect. And I did not change one way I ate for about 6 months, and I lost like 60 pounds. Why? Just because I got up and walked. Just doing something. And what did that do? My beliefs changed, my behavior changed. I started feeling better, and I said, well, wait a minute. If walking can do that, what could running and eating lettuce do? So my beliefs changed, my behavior changed. I feel different. Now, I know I'm 48, and I'm going to hit the big 5-0 in a couple years, but I want to get ready for a marathon. I think I could do it. I feel better now at 48, Doug, than I did when I was 21. It's not about age. It's about if I believe right, I behave right, I feel right. That dichotomy, that scenario is true in every walk of my life and yours as well. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Lord, thank you for this time. Thank you for warning us that we're getting a little long, and I appreciate the benevolence. And we just ask you that this word that we've been given will sink deeply into us and will cause change and create effect for your glory. In your name we pray. Amen. Love you guys.